Welcome to the AAA NFT podcast, all about affordable NFTs, bringing you from 0 to 60 in the non-fungible token world without breaking the bank, with your hosts Andrew, aka Rantom, and George from Mostly Stable on Zedrun, who will help you navigate new projects, interview expert guests, and explore NFT trends. So whether you're on your first or 50th NFT, we're going to have something for you. And as a quick note, we are not, I repeat not, financial advisors, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Alrighty, disclaimer over, let's get to it.
Today on the All About Affordable NFTs. I did it, Andrew. Full perfect intro. Nailed it. What are we talking about? We are talking about our theme, and that is...
What are we talking about, George? Oh, no.
How to understand rarity and what that actually looks like inside of a project. But first, what kind of things are we seeing in the news, Andrew?
I've been looking for airdrops everywhere ever since getting my ENS airdrop. Just recently mentioned that. Got a nice token drop from them for owning my ENS, my random.eth name. And I've been on the hunt looking at where are the next airdrops going to come from. There's some good resources out there, but I've been trying out all sorts of platforms and protocols and just giving everything a shot. Figure it's worth trying them out right now. It's a big part of Web3 that it is rewarding users versus just giving it all to the companies to get the message to the users. Hoping that this will continue.
And just to play translator here, the ENS, those are the ETH names, and airdrops being when something is delivered to the addresses that hold said, you know, ETH names or even a project. And it is actually like pretty beneficial if you're talking about a spray and pray type of strategy, I guess, similar to what All About Affordable does, where we're saying like, how do we pick up as many sort of shots on goal opportunities for drops or, you know, the lucky one-offs that end up mooning. But yeah, that's awesome that you got that drop. Pretty nice one. Made me have the FOMO.
Yeah, it's not the first one. I don't think it's gonna be the last. I think it is worth. I really do think it's a strategy worth putting some time into. You know, it's a different. I think it is really a big part of Web3 and how it's going to reward more users versus just paying a lot of the services to get the rewards to the users. You know, in the past, we used to see a lot of startups use discounts and free offers for maybe a first order or first trial. And I think this is the new way of trying to reward users. And I was really appreciative of the fact that they did it in a way that wasn't announced ahead of time. I think it's makes it a lot more genuine of the users that want to use it for the sake of using the platform or product or whatever it may be versus those on the lookout for just the airdrop, you know, like I've been doing lately. but at the same time, I've been finding all sorts of great new products and I'm now into those. And it's the potential of the airdrop that got me there. And there's some great projects out there and I'm impressed with what I'm seeing as far as new projects that are out and available to try out. And the UI and UX has come a long way since I've tried out a lot of these DeFi protocols, decentralized finance protocols the last couple of years ago, I guess I would say.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I still think for anyone feeling like, oh gosh, like, I'm late to the game. Like, just keep in mind how early this is. And
yeah,
there's definitely opportunities still out there. Speaking of early to the game, we are really waiting on the Coinbase NFT marketplace. And I really loved your take on this, Andrew. Maybe you can walk us through how you're viewing this.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this upcoming platform a couple times. I think you brought this to us a couple weeks ago, George, but I've been trying to look more closely at what projects are they going to bring onto that platform when they first launch. It's going to be a curated platform. It's not going to be like OpenSea that lists every project. There's only going to be what seems like a relatively small number of projects. I've heard of handful, and I think we mentioned them in the past, the Mooncats, an old project, Ghosts, GHXSTS is another one, but that's, I believe, something like a 5 ETH floor. So Cool Cats, another one that was just announced on there. That's another pretty premium priced project. So trying to keep an eye on what projects will be on this platform first, you know, what price level are they at, and, you know, how interesting will they look to these new Coinbase, hopefully new NFT collectors, right?
Yeah, just to spell it out very clearly, what you're trying to say is it'll probably be an interesting strategy to look at lower priced, highly vetted, newly shown to the Coinbase NFT marketplace to say, hey, what happens when you open up a whole new swath of buyers at a certain price point? And more likely than not, we're going to be trying to find also projects for All About Affordable to share with you all that will fit that mark. I think this is just so spot on. I'm pissed I didn't think about it, but I'm very glad that you shared it with me, because I'm like, my mind has just been going. Where and how do you figure out what projects are going to be listed there?
So I've noticed the Coinbase, I can't remember if it's a Coinbase NFT specific Twitter account or if it's the main Coinbase account, but there's different projects that will get announced on their Twitter. And those projects, of course, pick up on that and make it known. That's how they heard about Cool Cats just today in their Discord. Actually, they highlighted that one. But Mooncats was announced as one of the first four projects when they announced the, or I think it was shortly after they announced the platform, and I've been trying to keep an eye on that, because I do think that having 10 million more potential customers is a potential big impetus for a price movement.
I'm no economist, but I'll tell you what, I like the thinking there quite a bit. And it's important to note the difference between a curated versus an OpenSea. And OpenSea, we've covered it, we've talked about it, the pros, the cons, the whatevers, the cons, legitimately conning you.
True.
That yes. If you have vetting, this layer of trust actually is probably a beautiful way to onboard a lot of new collectors, so that their first experience isn't, I don't know, misspelling Cool Cats, getting defrauded, and then being, you know, kind of out of luck, and frankly being like, yeah, I thought this was a scam, I got scammed, and here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Coinbase has done a great job at making things safe for crypto investors, for you know, people that weren't always crypto investors. And I think that they're going to do the same thing with NFTs. They're going to make this somewhat, I mean, it's going to be safe, it's going to be almost frustratingly safe at times, I think, to some of the consumers on there, and that's okay. You know, there are other alternatives.
That's been the Coinbase
I was at that point
from the beginning. Yeah, that's their value.
Absolutely, problem. I was at safe. That point of being frustrated at not having access to certain tokens, and you know, for those, I would go off the platform. But in most cases, they were probably right to take the slow route. I mean, Brian Armstrong has even mentioned that being a frustration, that they want to go faster, it's going to be slow. That's sort of by design. So it's going to be the trusted projects. You're not going to have to, like you said, worry about how you're spelling Mooncats or putting the space in, or if there's like a hidden underscore or something in there. I mean, there's serious concerns and problems with OpenSea. And to be frank, they're not that hard for a marketplace like Coinbase to overcome by whitelisting what is actually allowed versus having to ban the things that do wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And the million-dollar question, when Coinbase, when do they publicly say it?
So what I've read is that it's coming later this year. We are recording this in mid-November. Gives us about, 40 some odd days for them to do this. We'll see if it comes out this year. I don't know if it's really going to come this year, or if we're really looking at sometime early, or hopefully early next year. But I know a lot of people are looking at this one as a potential catalyst for another another surge in the NFT market. There's a lot of people.
I want to draw a parallel to Apple and how they dropped how they just remade the game for MP3 players with the iPod. Mm. They weren't the first by far. They waited to see how the market was moving, what was actually needed. And then they, like you just said, they came in and they changed the game. They went slow, but they just aced it with a product. And I'd say for the machinery that Coinbase has, I think you're right. This may usher in a new boom, and with curation in these elements, it's something to watch for sure, which projects get listed and allowed in there. Like, look no further than the relationship that Robinhood had to Dogecoin. I'm going to tell you what, Dogecoin doesn't do a fraction of what it did this year, late last year. I'd say mostly early this year, if not for being listed on Robinhood, easily traded. Obviously, meme culture took over, but the reduction of friction was huge for that.
Absolutely. And to go even closer to the Coinbase, maybe not analogy here, but anytime there's rumors of Coinbase potentially listing a token, that price usually starts creeping up. And then it's one of those, buy the rumor, sell the news. Often by the time it gets to the Coinbase platform, it may have been bought up enough and then isn't going to serve necessarily for getting onto the platform, but it's still huge to bring that access to so many more people. And that's what's going to happen here. And by only giving people a handful of projects, I mean, even if you're talking about a couple dozen, that's tiny compared to what the NFT market is. And there are certainly a good number of people who have done quite well in their Coinbase investments. There's no shortage of money sitting in Coinbase wallets and a lot of general interest. It'll be exciting when it does launch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've already been playing with the Coinbase wallet, actually. And I really love how they just have this like quick tab and it connects in and shows me all of my NFTs. So you already see some of the UX, like a sort of sneak peek on that. And I'd encourage folks to, if you haven't already, play with the Coinbase wallet and connect, something so you can see how that plays out.
Good point. Hopefully we'll start seeing some, we've talked about it before, but wouldn't mind seeing some innovation in the wallet side. Also, wouldn't mind seeing, speaking airdrops, a mask, MetaMask airdrop someday. That'd be a great one to get.
Oh, epic. Oh gosh, get me excited. Alrighty, you found us an awesome affordable project. If I remember correctly, you found this at NFT NYC.
Yes, it was being kind of broadcasted all over Times Square. It would be hard to miss this one. Coming from
not a sleeper.
No, not exactly a sleeper. I did the homework of walking from my hotel towards Times Square and saw the giant red billboard being blasted in front of me multiple times a day. So this was something that took me a lot of hard work. Weren't a lot of people other than, I don't know how many millions of people that see the billboards daily in Times Square, but a small select group of us. So anyway, it's from the team RTFKT. I'm never exactly sure how to say that. Artifact, I believe, is how it is sort of said. It's spelled out RTFKT. And the project is Clone X. So the site is actually CloneX at RTKFT. The RTKFT team, Artifact team, they've done some cool drops in the past. They've done a lot of shoes, and both real life shoes and metaverse shoes. They've done custom shoes that were available for Punks holders at one point. They've done some projects with Jeff Staples, who's a big shoe sneaker designer going back 20 years or so, kind of helped get the whole sneaker culture movement into the, into the kind of crazy level that it is now, in the sense of the crazy collectors, super high-end pieces. So anyway, this is a 10,000, I believe it's 10,000 piece avatar project coming out Let's see, coming out tomorrow, it looks like, as we, based on the release of this, as we speak, it's a little bit more than that. And
yeah, November 18th, this is according to Twitter, November 18th is when they're saying they're going to pre-sale, and then they say public sale November 20th. I don't fully know what those words mean.
It might be, so I'm guessing there's a whitelist for holding one of their other pieces.
Probably, yeah.
I think I've read that. Looks like there are actually 20,000 pieces for this collection. Yeah, so there's 10,000, it looks like, in the pre-sale at 0.05 each. The public sale, the price isn't actually mentioned there. I thought that it was 0.05. There's 10,000 for the public sale. It's going to be a Dutch auction. What that means is the price will drop, starts high, it drops down. Didn't quite realize that when I was bringing this one up. I was thinking that it was the 0.05 ETH price, and was recommended based on that. Either way, I think that they're, well, no, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say that either way, there could be a gas issue. In general, Dutch auctions seem to eliminate some of the gas issues. ArcBlocks has used this for a lot of their recent drops in order to try to eliminate some of the gas wars where people are just paying as much as possible to try to cut the line, essentially to get ahead in the processing of the transactions. So with the Dutch auction, with the price dropping, you'll generally see a few people buy early, and then there gets to be a tipping point where all of a sudden everybody realizes that there are not so many left, everybody jumping in. So you do have to be careful of that if you are going to get into a project like this, just watching watching the gas, but then also with the Dutch auction, making sure that it's still feasible to get your transaction through once you kind of see that everybody is jumping in. This is one that I would expect it to do pretty well because it has a lot of marketing behind it. A lot of people already invested in the project or other artifact projects, so they will be able to join that pre-sale mint. It will be interesting to see where this price starts for the public sale. Wish I had recognized that part before bringing it up here and was able to give a specific price. They do have
we're not sure what the price is. But here's the truth. We don't know what the price is going to be. We're watching it on the drop. Weird things happen in the post aftermath. So we're watching it. And to be fair, maybe we'll circle back next week and decide where we mark the floor price. I do want to mention that I think the actual project is very interesting. It's like what I think Mebits probably should have been. They're actually creating these live 3D file updates for your clone. It's like clones RFTs, like they look like pretty sort of like simulated graphic-y, modern, kind of like The Sims, if I were to draw a parallel. But they're going to give you like available downloads of actually using this across a lot of different file types, which means that they're already like sort of metaverse first thinking in terms of like avatar usage and playable avatar, usable. They're talking about forging events, which, I don't fully know, but I think that's for the wearables, probably for that. And so your clone will be naked, I guess, and you need to buy clothes. So
it does say something about getting ecosystem. Get that crazy jacket in real life. So they have done things where they produce goods in real life. So maybe there is some way to actually forge pieces to have them make it. I think you're right. They're trying to do a lot of different things here with this metaverse. They've got some great technology. They definitely have produced some impressive stuff in the past. And this looks to be kind of bring a lot of these different AR and metaverse technologies together into an avatar project, like you said, maybe Mebits wanted to do or at least alluded to doing, but so far I've not delivered on. But it's and you're right, we don't know the exact price, we don't know where it's gonna end up. Gonna watch it, gonna keep an eye on it as the price drops, even look into the private sale a little bit more, figure out what the deal is there.
Yeah. So, you know, just talking about the evolution, the timelines of projects, you know, the pre-mint hype, like hype is high, right? So prices are probably going to be spiking early. There's probably going to be a lot of flipping early on. There may be an opportunity for people that get these drops to maybe they sell low at that floor, but that price will probably rise for a little while these things sort of exchange hands and people try out different price points. And then you'll probably get into the trough of sorrow a month in. And that's probably where I would find myself for this project, being like checking in a month and being like, where are we? Although I'm going to have an eye on it because maybe there's an opportunity of somebody who kind of like is flipping it way, way, way low because of the mint price that they get it at. And they're just like, I'll just turn it around because that's just what some folks do. We'll see. All right. Shall we move into our main theme topic? That was a super interesting. I'm excited to watch that. So for understanding rarity, there are really, I think, a lot of different ways of looking at it. But ultimately, I think this most is applicable to projects that have the sort of 10,000 classic mint, right? You have a collection. They're not all the same. And in that collection, there are properties, like literally just metadata about each one of these projects. So they'll have, you know, some will have hats, some will have colors. And it's up to literally when you create the and mint the NFT as the creator, what they have there are different elements that they tag it with. And then you see the percentage of, you know, your cats that have hats or are blue or have a certain type of background. And the community then sort of judges objectively, subjectively, which of these attributes are more or less valuable. So, you know, I think it's very speculative when we're talking about rarity in the context of art or PFP, the profile pictures, but it's actually very, very relevant to value, quite literally, in games, and particularly games like Zed, where actually the rarity, right, of a Z1, Z2 is a huge difference in the way that NFT actually performs in game. It is faster. It's a better breeder. People pay a higher price. And so I would say when I'm looking at rarity, I probably give it a bigger sort of discount when I'm looking at artistic NFTs. And then I really pay attention to rarity when I'm looking at things that are game pieces, because it has in-game code capabilities and dictates how much you will be able to earn when you play to earn. How am I doing, Andrew? What is your take on rarity?
Everything's a one of one, really. So, you know, it's rarities. Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of different ideas of you know, how much we should look at rarities, how much they should matter. And, you know, you can't ignore them in any collection. You know, you can talk about even if it's an art piece, you can talk about the idea that you should just want to value it for how it looks. But, you know, the truth is rarity does play a role in that even, because if something is harder to come across, if it looks different than all the others, it's going to stand out. And that doesn't always mean that it's more desired, but you don't need as many people to desire the thing that is less common for it to, you know, for it to be harder to get. And it's, I don't know, we're so focused on this right now in the minting and the post mint time. You know, we try to look at, you know, which ones are the most rare, and it is the same whether it's a PFP or an art or whatever collection that we're trying to kind of look at, you know, rank the pieces, almost rank them from one to 10. I'm sorry, one from one to 10,000 is really what I mean. But I think in most cases, we're probably better off saying, you know, there's really kind of different groups of them. You know, there's a top level of really rare ones. We get to a second level of like, you know, it's pretty, you know, pretty close to that. And then there's, you know, maybe one or two other levels, but a lot of times we're kind of getting into, you know, there's really only a couple levels of these rarities. You know, even we're talking about different attributes for games, you know, they can be very good, but at a certain point, you know, they can only differentiate themselves so much from those top levels. You know, they're getting into a certain class, and that class tends to somewhat perform similar, even if it's not necessarily the same rarities. They have some attributes that kind of get them to be a different level. It could be, you know, for the horses, it could be, you know, various. I'm not sure how they turn the metadata, especially off the top of my head, but different stamina and strength characteristics versus in a game, you could have, I'm sorry, in like a fighting game or something, you could have, you know, different health and defense or weapons. And then in art, you can just have, it could be different color patterns or I mean, any number of different things that set these apart. But I think we're really I don't know, it seems kind of useless to me to try to rank them from 1 to 10,000 and say that like one is like 3 better than the other. They're kind of negligible when you get to that level, but it is helpful to have some ideas. Like, is this one of the most common things? Am I going to see this around the collection all the time? Or is this one really unlike what most people have, what most other pieces in this collection are like?
Yeah, I think you get down to the idea of scarcity, right? And that's what this, you know, the entire ecosystem is based on, the idea of ownership. And the idea of owning a thing means that there are a certain number of them out there. And when I own it, no one else can. And the value then, because it's what we do, is then determined by how rare and how scarce that piece is within the larger whole. And again, you can look at properties and look at it. So anytime I wander into a new project and we're looking at it, I immediately try to understand what the game is, right? What is the highest valued and why? Like, okay. And so if for a lot of our projects, you know, if you throw up CryptoBots, for instance, I can tell you right away that there are generations going from like 0 to like 256-ish, and Gen Zeros are the most valuable, except there's also fancy ones. So for whatever reason, the community really likes these fancy ones because they just look cool. And there's fewer of them, right? 5% of them. And even in the, you know, different projects I look at, I try to say, all right, what is the community valuing? And quite literally, you just do a filter for that. You look at the soft floor for whatever that attribute is, and you immediately have that. And so in like in Zedrun, for instance, you can filter by, let me see, Genesis horses, for instance, or a certain Z level or a certain breed type. And you just find where that particular floor is. And that's why floors can be really, really, really misleading.
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about that before, how, you know, a floor price isn't, don't pin everything on a floor. There's a lot of other attributes to be looking at, including the metadata like this. You know, in many cases, it's worth paying a little bit more to not have the floor. The piece that's on the literal floor gets something a little bit above that, and you may find that there's some attribute that makes it a valuable horse. It actually makes it one of the, you know, top 20% of the collection. And, you know, while that may not make a difference in giving you access or getting you into a Discord or even just, you know, what it looks like in your wallet, it can help you when you're going to sell the piece to have one that's in the top 20% versus having one that's, you know, in the bottom 10%. It's going to be a lot easier to sell when, you know, when side by side with one of the same price, you can beat that. You're going to be better off. So it's definitely worth looking at. And it's important to think about this from not just your own perspective of, you know, which one do I value, but think about this. Is this something that you're going to eventually sell? And in most cases that is true. And it's worth looking at what are other people going to be looking at? On OpenSea, we've gone through it a little bit, how they have some of the metadata over there, are the properties over on the left side. And it's one place to look at it, but it's certainly not the only place to look. And I think going to try to go through some of those things.
Yeah. So I have one rarity.tools is really, I think, one of the biggest ones in the game. And yeah, right. Essentially, like you pop up your project and you can explore traits of it. It does a rank by rarity and you can kind of go through and find that rarity of going into it. And, you know, like just for fun, you know, I pull up the CryptoPunks and it's, it's just kind of funny to see the difference here, but there's a huge range. And I have to hand it to CryptoPunks because I think, you know, they are absolute pioneers, but I think I would say really kicked off the idea of, you know, these different silly attributes being, you know, rare or not, and that driving the value. And so, you know, it's an interesting project, I say, to just look at, but.
Yeah, it's interesting to think like who kicked it off, because, you know, it's something that we've always seen in any collection, right? I mean, going back to well before digital collections, and then, you know, you arise after the rare ones. And it was something that I was definitely familiar with back in my baseball card collecting days, knowing that, you know, there's a chance of getting a special edition of a card. And it really does play into the psychology of collectors. If you know that you got one that is hard to get, it's really rewarding in the sense of just holding onto it, not even the value of it. You as a collector, you realize that, wow, it took me a long time to be able to get this, or the odds are so small to be able to get this, mm-hmm. or whatever it may be, that it really does be, you know, it starts adding value to it. It's not just this, I don't know, somewhat arbitrary idea. You know, there's really something to it. And
so you're totally right, because we're talking about attributes, but it's essentially value by probabilistic nature of generating it. And yes. For a lot of these generated pieces, you're like, look, it's just rare to roll that number. You know, those are the odds. And so it's like odds meet the market in that sense too.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I've definitely noticed that sort of appreciation for it in generative art pieces, because I think there is such a appreciation of the code side of it, to then say like, well, wait a minute, this is the one that came out like this of this code. It's nice to know that it is super rare, and that you can actually prove that it is rare, as opposed to just taking someone's word for it.
And that's the fun thing about minting, though, because it's exciting, but there's the lottery. You can get the most rare one of that set. And as you look at any of these projects, you know, the deltas here are amazing. Like the difference in the quality of some of these things, just based on rarity and the price they fetch, like you can hit the lottery. So far, I've been, I will say, fairly unlucky when I've minted and ended up with the broad average. You know, I come out with like my lazy looking whale. I'm like, oh, where are the attributes? So sometimes it pays to sort of like wait for the mint to settle. As we were talking with this project, wait for it to settle. But in the early days, and I think you're really good at this, sort of identifying like where rarity is going to go. Because it tends to be Wild West when you start. And then, you know, as the dust settles, people begin to establish, well, sure, you know, the probabilistic nature of this is fine, but this other attribute is really cool.
That's true. That's a good point. It's not just how rare something is. A good example of this, and one that's pointed out often, is hoodies and punks are not all that rare. I mean, they're rare, but not compared to a lot of other attributes that are not nearly as highly valued as hoodies. And I don't know what the floor of those is, but the last I had looked, it was something like I want to say 40 or 50% premium to the floor. So it's a big difference. And it's one that it's just desired more. It's not super rare. And I think that is important to think about. There are other attributes, and going back to punks there, I think there's things like the, moles are generally looked at as kind of a negative attribute, and not meant as any kind of comment, but it's one that is rare, but it's not desired. So, you know, rare doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. mean good yeah. all the time. You know, you've got to have people that want it, and you can kind of have the opposite, I think, at times, and like you can be especially unlucky in a way by being one of the few that gets one of the bad attributes. But I'd say in general, that's relatively unusual for these. In most cases, something rare is valued as something rare, even if it's not quite as valued as much as something even more rare than it in the same collection, if that makes any sense.
But I think it's such an important note, because it's scarce doesn't mean it's valuable. And also, you know, pulling up intentionally the rarity tools CryptoPunks, there's a lot of sort of, you know, homage paid, and that's I think some of this like if your character happens to have a hoodie and you're like, oh, interesting. Like hoodies just have like a mystique now. It's just as a joke almost. I'm like, oh, like oh, I want the one with the hoodie. And like, I myself find myself looking for the stupid thing that has the hoodie. I'm like, oh, I should.
Well, it is interesting when new projects come out, they tend to borrow or pay homage to past projects and use a lot of the same, not a lot of the same, but like they're different attributes from other projects. You see, you'll see hoodies, or you'll see, I think some of the Bored Ape pipes or things like that. I guess those are even punks, but you'll see a lot of the same attributes along these, and you definitely see people that maybe will jump to them early. And I've noticed that some of these projects seem to use, like they'll make a hoodie super common because they know that it adds some level of desirability to a good number of pieces. And it's not a bad strategy to make people want more of the common pieces versus making them look kind of, not as desirable. There's different ways to go about it. And, you know, making more really cool pieces sounds better than making some of them not desirable versus some of them just okay and some great. one thing I want to note about this tool, I use this tool a lot when I'm both buying and selling the rarity dot tools. And I believe I mentioned this once before, but I find it really helpful to, on the left side, when you're on desktop anyway, there's a price input where you can put the min and max ETH. And if you put the max ETH of kind of like get a price range, you know, of your general price range of like where you're trying to go, you can get an idea of like what is the most rare one at that price. And sometimes you'll see that there's like a 2000 rank gap between the first and second one. And in that case, I would say you'll see one maybe ranked at like number 1500 and then the next one ranked at number 3500 and they're at the same price. And not saying 100% of the time, but that often is a good indicator, a good clue that maybe you should go for that one that is rarer if it's that big of a difference, because somebody else is probably going to see that as well at some point. And it's nice when you're also listing a piece, you can put a price that you're thinking of listing it for, see where yours ranks, see how it ranks compared to the other, see how its price compared to the other pieces ranked around that same price. You can either, you know, be a little more aggressive or at least know how you're pricing it compared to the market as opposed to just going based on the floor price.
Yeah, that's super helpful. So you're saying in the general listing page, you can actually put that filter in?
So on the rarity tools page, if you go to any of the projects on the left side, the item filters, there's a price section for the min and max ETH. And if you apply the prices in there, you can kind of, you know, filter it down and get a smaller number, smaller subset of listings to compare it to, or even to kind of make your shopping list.
Cool. I didn't know. Oh my gosh, there it is. That's super helpful, because I've been looking at some new projects for future episodes and I'm going to use that. Super helpful. One other quick tool, Rarity Sniper. I see it being integrated as a Discord function that people use, so you can like check your number and it initially like just drops in your number like, okay. It's like, I'm cool. People get excited when they get listed. I don't think I have any other tools though, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to use the same tools for the most part. That Rarity Sniper is one that I've used, and it seems like sometimes projects are listed on one versus the other. I tend to prefer Rarity Tools versus Rarity Sniper, but they're similar. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a handful that we're leaving out, and they all do something similar. I think there are different ways that you can kind of weight the attributes if you really want to get into it. But they're all kind of doing the same thing, trying to take this metadata, put it across reference with the prices, hopefully at least to give you some idea of what you're buying and how the piece compares to the collection as a whole.
Yeah. All right. I think we can call it there. Anything else to add?
I think that's it, George.
That was a good one. Another winner. I'm excited. This drop. I'm going to be watching.
Right. You hear that? We're calling this one a winner.
Calling it a blind drop winner. We'll have to establish the price, though. We're going to have to establish what is the floor for the keep us honest tracking, which you can find at 3 a.m.
I thought you were calling our episode a winner.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Every episode's a winner. But I like this conversation a lot about, I learned something. Like, this is why I'm here. I learned something. It made me thinking a little differently.
Wow. Leave us a review. We'll do that too.
People. Reviews are rare. So give us some.
This has been an episode of the AAA NFT podcast, all about affordable NFTs. The episode notes and resources may be found at 3ANFT.com in our show notes. Again, 3ANFT.com. And that reminder, don't bet what you can't afford to lose. Remember, we are not financial advisors and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Thanks for joining us. I hope you learned something.